actually give that book to every single person I know if they're moving on for a milestone or something. I always give them that book. And that was the theme, actually. Well, I'll get to that. Never mind. Remind myself to do that. My name is Roya Sushin, and I've probably talked to all of you at some point this weekend so far. The places I've been. I happen to think that my life has been pretty cool so far. I'm excited about it, what I've done and what I'm going to be doing. And I look back and think about random things I've done or thoughtful things I've done, and they just seem to be a really neat bunch of experiences. And so I was trying to tie them all together somehow, and I thought that I really do credit unschooling for the opportunities of every single place I've been. And so this talk, I'm giving examples of specific places I've been with the idea that I'm also going to illustrate key concepts in unschooling, a specific one that I learned in any given situation. And I have special unschooling words for you that my lovely mother will tape up as I talk about them. Another thing. So there's that. There's that whole journey through life and look at all the neat places I've been, hence the footsteps. But there's also this other concept of concentric circles that I was on the phone with one of my very best friends, Marina, and she and I were talking about how I was going to organize my talk and what I was going to talk about. And I started, and it just helped me to talk out loud to her about it. And we started realizing that every key unschooling concept was really, was really, started small, started like this, and then got bigger and bigger and bigger. And I just, my awareness would grow and grow and grow. And so I wanted to just put this up here because that visual helped me so much with the concepts that I was learning and where I was going. So the very first thing is home. When I was 10, my mom took me out of school. I didn't want to at all. I really didn't want to. I threw a temper tantrum. She bribed me with office supplies. I think we talked about this in our talk the other day. She bribed me with office supplies, notebooks, pens, the such. And then I would talk to her, and she said, try it for 3 months, and then you can decide whether or not to go back. Squeak. And so I did. I tried it for 3 months. She cheated. She took us to SeaWorld on our very first day of official homeschooling, and from that moment on, I was in. This is it. I'm a homeschooler. We started out SeaWorld. Yeah. We started out playing with unit studies, that kind of thing. I think it lasted about a week, mostly because I had all these new office supplies I wanted to play with. But then after a little while, we just stopped doing structured things like that. It really didn't take that long. I think that was my mom's idea the whole time, and she gradually eased me into that. But so then from that moment on, I was an unschooler. I only started articulating this to myself a couple years later, though. But my point with my mom pulling me out of school is, and I touched on this a little bit yesterday, but I can't stress how much this was the biggest thing that happened, was the sense of empowerment. Cue the empowerment. Just the act of her taking me out of school made, wow, maybe those footsteps are not such a great, masking tape doesn't work. Her taking me out of school, it didn't really matter what else we did those first couple months or even years. Just the fact that she looked around, saw everybody else that she knew had their kids in public school. Everybody else I knew. I did not know. I think I might have known one person who was a homeschooler, but they were very school-at-home Christian homeschoolers. So I knew no one who was doing what we were doing. And the fact that she had the guts to take her kids out of school, despite the fact that everybody else we knew just had no idea about it. That was the most empowering thing that could have happened. From that moment on, my vision's been trained differently. Now I look at things and I don't have to go with everybody else. I always see options. And that is such a key thing, that I always see options. And I blame and credit, alternatively, my mom for that. And so my first circle started small. I put home, but I really meant just my mom taking us out of school. And so for a while, it was our home. We did stuff as a family. We hadn't for a long time. I have two little sisters, and we were all in school all day long, so it was nice. It was a vacation to spend time. I remember just those first couple of weeks were very home-oriented. We decorated all the sliding glass doors in our house. We were doing an ocean theme, I think. We wrote sea shanties together and went to SeaWorld, went to the beach every day, but it was my family. And then I don't know if my mom just had that time to, she wanted us to get used to the fact that we weren't at school. But then the next thing we did was we joined a local homeschooling group called Rainbow Kids. And I remember so clearly getting out of the car. We had our cooler packed with cooler food, although we got much better at packing cooler food in the future. This was our first park day. We had our cooler packed with cooler food. We pulled up to the park, opened the door, and I remember my jaw literally dropping because there were all these people at this park, and I just remember turning around and going, all these people are as crazy as my mother. And it was eye-opening. The fact that there were dozens of people. I think there were about 40 families in Rainbow Kids at that point. And their stuff was spread all over the picnic tables. Their kids were running around. Immediately, people walked up to me and gave me hugs. And I remember that really freaked me out at first. I was amazed that there were other people in the world doing this. And so that was the first thing that I really got from Rainbow Kids, was just the exposure to other people. I had no idea that there were other people in the world doing this. Exposure. The second thing, Rainbow Kids was really good for doing stuff like theme days, where we would all dress up. I remember Lori Ingalls' Wilder Day was a favorite one of mine, where we'd all dress up and we'd go and we'd cook things and play fiddle music and talk about the books. We did, what else did we do? We did Egyptian Day, where same thing, we dressed up, we ate food, we just had all of the picnic tables everywhere were all theme days, and they were all geared towards whatever topic we were talking about. We did a lot of tours, a lot of tours. We met once a week, so we had a lot of time to do this. We went on the neatest tours. We went on the Thomas Brothers, the map factory, we went there. We went to the LA Times. We went to water plants and electrical plants and all sorts of really neat things. And the rest of the time when we weren't doing a theme day or a tour, we played. We went to a different park every week, and there were 50 families worth of kids to play with. Through this group, actually pretty soon after I started, I decided we should do a play. I wanted to do a play. I was currently in a more school production of Annie, I think it was, and I wanted to do a play. And so, with my homeschooling friends. And so a group of us, I think maybe 7 or 8 of us, I think 11 to 13-year-old girls, decided we were going to do The Wizard of Oz. And we dreamed it all up at a sleepover at someone's house and then did it. We performed, directed. I was Dorothy, just in case anyone was wondering. I was Dorothy. And we got everybody else in the homeschooling group involved. My little sister was Toto. My other little sister was a Munchkin mare. Everybody was involved. You couldn't. That was what Park Day was for a while, was working on The Wizard of Oz. And through that, I had my first exposure also to experiential learning. Before that, in school, maybe the footsteps aren't so important anymore. Yes, absolutely. I lost my train of thought. So experiential learning, that's the point. I had never done that much. I mean, in school, I had a good school experience. I don't remember feeling particularly scarred or deprived of anything. But I was in a school with 30 kids my own age, all sitting there being told we have to be quiet, being told that these are the specific things we're working on now, and no, we can't work on that. And my teacher was neat because I was a twitchy little kid, and she let me tie yarn to my desk and do friendship bracelets while she talked, because otherwise I was all over the place. So that was neat, but making friendship bracelets at a desk while a teacher tells you the difference between there, there, and there is not the same thing as putting on costumes and eating the food of a specific time period. And so the experiential learning and the exposure to this was just phenomenal. And that was my second circle stage, was just that exposure. So first it was just home, local, right there. The next one was a bigger a bigger group. So this was people in our district, or our county. So then my third thing that expanded, after about 2.5 or 3 years of going to Rainbow Kids every week, we put on 2 or 3 plays. We went to every local place that we could go on a tour possible. Then we went to the Homeschool Association of California conference in Sacramento. And I think my mom has been there before, but this was my first time. My mom and I drove up together, and I was 13. I was going to turn 14 in a couple months. I had no idea what to expect. At this point, I was comfortable with our local group of, you know, I knew there were homeschoolers in the world, but we pulled up to the Sacramento Radisson Hotel parking lot, opened the doors, and immediately there were mobs of teenagers. Mobs. You know, they don't walk, they mob, they glob. There's mobs of them. And I remember hiding. I wanted to hide behind my mom. Luckily, as one mob walked by, I recognized someone I knew from our local group and kind of attached myself to them, although I don't think it happened quite that quickly. But, and it was an amazing experience. My circle, again, expanded dramatically. I met people that I still talk to. My best that friend that I told you about, Marina, I met her that year when I was 13 at the HSC conference. So I was trying to think about what key concept that this illustrates. What part of unschooling or homeschooling did I learn? And I was thinking, well, I had exposure, yeah, because all of a sudden my circle expanded. I realized there were people all over the world and, well, at this point, all over the state that do this. But also, so I was thinking, I was on the phone with my friend Marina, and we were just going on. We went on for about half an hour trying to figure out what concept. And I was like, well, I remember being just obsessed with my friends at that point, just obsessed. Every waking moment was spent on IRC, an internet chat room, or on our HSC Teens listserv. What is it that I learned from that time period of life? The whole, my focus in life, I pulled all-nighters on the computer. So those of you who have kids who are spending hours and hours and hours online, think about the value of what they're learning and leave them alone. I spent hours and hours online. We wrote snail mail to each other. We met at each other's houses for parties and campouts. And so I was just trying to think, we went on and on and on. What is it that I learned? Why, you know, what's the word that means I was obsessed with my friends and what we were doing? And hung up, thought about it for a second, started laughing, called her back and went, Marina, it's socialization. We had no idea. Oh, that's socialization. Oh, okay. One thing about HSC that was really neat was that they have the once-a-year conference, but they also hold bi-monthly campouts, and they alternated between Northern and Southern California. And so it wasn't just that conference. The conference was the big hub of activity, but there were also campouts in Joshua Tree and up at Patrick's Point and Refugio. And so I had a lot of chances, and relatively speaking, to hang out with these people. They were also in California, so that made it slightly easier that it all was within the same state. So now I'm talking about socialization, which I always vowed never to do because I'm tired of it. But when I was excited about talking about this before I realized it was socialization. So another thing about HSC that was neat was that, yes, there were teen programs and activities that happened at the conference, but it was a family conference, and they were family campouts. And so while I was meeting my friend Marina, for example, I was also spending extensive amounts of time with her little brother and her parents. While I was meeting my first boyfriend, I was also spending extensive amounts of time with his brothers and his parents. And it was all families, 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 which illustrates the point that everybody knows about homeschooling, I'm sure, that you get the opportunity to interact with not just 35 other people your own age. Even the teenagers that I hung out with ranged in age from 13 all the way up to 18, 19. And so it was a very different experience being able to mob as a group. And we solicited adults to come be a teenager also. I remember there were a couple of grown-ups that we wanted nothing more than to spend every waking moment with that person. There's one in particular, I remember, Bruce. Bruce had the drums. He was the coolest guy in the world. He had the drums. He always held drum circles and things at our conferences. And not only that, but he was a great guy. And so we spent the whole time Bruce, come do this with us. Bruce, come do this with us. And he wasn't the only one. And I was just thinking about the difference of my friends and I wanting all these really cool adults to come hang out with us and the difference between my school friends who look at adults funny if they talk to them. And so that was a really big thing, that socialization, and I laugh every time I use that word now. So socialization, not only being able to experience people from all backgrounds and ages, but also I had the time to be able to spend to really do that interpersonal relationship stuff that if I was in school, I would have been told, shh, this isn't the time for socializing. But instead, I got to spend, oh yeah, socialization. Instead, I got to spend hours and hours and hours figuring myself out, figuring out other people, figuring out how we work together. We had drama online, if I recall. There was a lot of drama, but it was all on the computer where we talked about it and talked about it. And that amount of talking and articulating and, gee, I have this problem, and, well, okay, what's your solution? And that is invaluable. And I'm so glad I had that opportunity and that my parents didn't come and say, okay, you had an hour on the computer tonight, now go do your homework. Because I had that time and time and time to do that, well, I hope I'm a better person because of it. So once I stopped being completely obsessed with these particular people, my circle expanded again, and I started going to Cypress Community College. I put these as two different things, even though they're kind of overlapping in the same time period for me. At this point, I was about to turn 14. So it was it was the day after I got home from the HSE conference that I had my first day of school. And I had decided to go to Cypress College because I wanted cheap voice lessons. And I took voice, piano, maybe a drama class, I think, that first semester. Not a huge load, but it was enough for a 13-year-old who had never been to college. I remember I made my mom walk up the three flights of the Fine Arts Building with me the first day, and then that was it. So I went to Cypress College from the time I was 13 to when I took off for about a year to go traveling, and then I went to Cal State Long Beach. So from about 13 to 18-ish, I went to Cypress College. Along the way, well, here, let me tell you the technical aspects of it first. At our community college, this particular one, I was considered a concurrent enrollment student, which meant I don't think I had to pay at all the first 2 years, because the college thought that I was a high school student and assumed I was paying to go to high school. So I could go to college, and I didn't have to pay for high school, so it was free for me. After I was there for 2 years, they changed the rules so that if you weren't a high school graduate, you could only take 6 units, and at that point, my smallest semester load was 15 units. So I went and took the California proficiency exam when I was 15 just to get my high school diploma so I could take all the fun classes I wanted to take. And then I did that. At that point, I had to pay, but it was like $11 a unit. So even if I was taking those classes at like a Parks and Rec place, it was probably cheaper than it would have been there. And I got all the supplies and everything. So at Cypress College, I basically went through the catalog and went, ooh, that looks neat, and ooh, that looks neat, and signed up for those 5 classes. And after a semester of doing that, I was in the Fine Arts Building a lot, and every day I'd walk by the ceramics department, and there was always music going. It was all painted. There were signs and plants, and all the lockers inside had cool things on them. The wheels, the ceramic wheels, were all painted. Everybody was always so happy. The teacher would walk. She was also the chair of the Fine Arts Department, and she'd walk through the halls booming in her booming voice, and she was just so nice to everybody, and they were having so much fun, and the music coming from it was so great that I would walk by really slowly when I went by that hallway and decided that that's it, I'm going to take ceramics. And I had no exposure. Maybe once with Girl Scouts I went and did clay stuff, but nothing like this. I couldn't get in the first semester I tried because there was a wait list. Second semester I did, and I will never forget my very first night of classes in ceramics. I sat at a long table and with a notebook, and Char, who's the teacher, comes out and she starts talking about the things you're going to learn in this class, which are responsibility and attitude. And if you don't have responsibility and if you don't have attitude, then that's why you're in this class, to learn them. But that, those are the two key things that you need to learn in this class. And she kept talking, and I realized, oh, this is an unschooler. This teacher is an unschooler. She's the greatest example of unschooling I have ever seen in my life. And she, for example, our curriculum for a ceramics class, we had to read The Way of the Peaceful Warrior, Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, and Ishmael. Those were our three textbooks. What you did when you sat down the first day, I mean, and it was a ceramics class. We learned technical stuff too, but it really seemed as though ceramics was the vehicle for understanding so much more. And she, when we sat down, our syllabus was about that thick because she fills it with quotes about education and little success stories and talks about success versus failure and how to exceed and making choices in life. This, I save all of my syllabi from her class just because I'm planning on using them one day. And in that syllabus, one of the things is a contract. It was a grading contract. And it said, I hereby decide to aim for this grade. I contract for this grade in your class. Preceding that page, there were 5 pages about what she expects from those different grades. So you never failed her class. You contracted for a grade, and you met that or not. C, she said, was a perfectly reasonable grade. She talks about how she hates giving grades, but if she has to, this is the way she's going to do it. C, she said, is great. The average person will get a C. If you want a B, you have to raise your standards. If you want an A, for a C, if I say make 6 cups, for an A, make 30. Always exceed expectations and be successful every day. And she defines success as, a collection of good habits every day. And so, anyways, she's full of all this kind of thing. And I could give this whole talk on what I learned from Char in ceramics. One of the key things was responsibility. So after you contract for that grade, you turn it in. She keeps it on a clipboard on her desk the whole semester. And you go about and you throw and you learn techniques and you help load the kills and you clean and you make amazing friends. The way she has the class set up is that advanced and beginners are all in the same so that advanced people can help beginners. And, I mean, everything she does is as unschooler as you can get within a classroom situation. It's amazing. And she always had great music playing and encouraged us to remember when to stop and take a step back and go outside and talk to people. And community, that was the other thing that she was really a strong proponent of. She wanted her classroom to work as an ideal community, so everybody left all their backpacks in one spot. You had your own little space for a locker for all your supplies. Everybody helped with all of the work. That was a huge thing for her. And so when I talk about responsibility, I don't mean she told us what to do and we were responsible for doing it. I mean we were responsible for looking around to see what needed to be done and taking it upon ourselves to do it. And not only that, but to take it upon ourselves to look and see what other people needed help with or just anything that needed to be done. She wanted us there 100% to make that community better. And that was such a key thing. It wasn't a class at all. It was a community. I was in that class for 8 years, and the people I met in that class are my best friends still. So I was going back to the grading. So at the end of the semester where we've done all our work and we have to learn to test that we know the technical aspects of the class, we played a game. We played like the weakest link kind of game where she would ask, we'd split up into teams and she'd ask us questions and we'd just answer, and then if we couldn't, we'd go sit out and then get another chance to come back in. So that was how we measured the technical aspects of ceramics, was through a game. And then she gave us a take-home exam. The take-home exam was 5 questions long. First one, what grade did you contract for? The second one, what grade do you feel you earned and why? The third one, why do you think that I made you read the books I made you read? Connect them to the class. The fourth one was, what do you know now that you didn't know before taking this class? And the fifth one was, how did you help this room work as a community? And that was our final exam. I spent, and you'd think, oh, five questions, but those five questions I labored for hours over, and they were amazing leading questions that you just, she made you think and think and think, and to do that every semester, and well, first, every semester to think about what you're going to contract for, and then at the end of the semester to wrap it all up with these questions, she gave us the tools for that introspection, and which helped me learn responsibility about that. Let's see what else I was going to talk about. No, I wrote responsibility in ceramics, so I guess that kind of covers it. When I look back, she also made us keep a journal in every class. She had us make postcard assignments. All of her assignments were really geared towards learning that kind of personal responsibility. And so at the same time, I wasn't only taking ceramics for 8 years of college, I was also doing other classes, and it was amazing to me, just that idea clicked, and all of a sudden I could apply that to all these other avenues of my life. And so I really credit her unschooling nature for teaching me the responsibility in that respect. So I completed something ridiculous, like 135 units at Cypress College, and decided that I was done, and it was time to travel for a little bit. Oh, also, Shar retired. That was the thing that made me decide I was done. Shar retired. I couldn't go to ceramics. And they were in a messy process of finding a new teacher, and I just didn't want to be around. So I decided to go travel. And I traveled a little bit. A lot of, you know, I'd go to the HSC conference and we'd travel around, or I'd go visit the friends I'd met at the HSC conference. So I'd done a little bit of traveling, but this one I decided to really go. And I went for months and months and months. And I took every form of transportation you could possibly think of. Boats and trains and cars and planes. I took ferries and even a 50-foot aluminum boat to get to an island once. That was really neat. Waldron Island up in the Puget Sound. It's great. This is one that I actually forgot to make a sign for in all my sign making. But the thing that the unschooling concept that I credit traveling is freedom or trust? Both. I can't remember which one I was going to make it for. So freedom and trust. That's why I didn't make one. I couldn't decide. I was pretty young when I first started traveling, and my parents, I'm sure, were gritting their teeth and clenching their fists and just trying to be okay with it, because I've always tried to do things sooner than what other people maybe thought I should. And I think it's because being in college, I had a lot of older friends, and so I always just kind of considered myself their peer, and yeah, I want to do that too, and wasn't ready for it necessarily. And so traveling was no different. And I wanted to go take off for months and months and months. I wanted to do that from when I was like 13, and my parents so kindly helped me along the way. So instead of handing me a Greyhound pass and letting me go, they'd be like, well, okay, let's go on a trip. And then my mom and I would go. And then I would split off from her for a little while and go visit a couple of friends in that area and then meet back up, and then we'd go other places. So instead of saying no, they really facilitated that and gave me the freedom to do that. And then as I got older and older and more able to handle it, then that freedom just extended and extended. But they never said, no, you can't. They always gave me the trust in me. And so I trusted me, too. So that was what gave me the confidence to go travel for months and months and months. And this Waldron Island leg of the trip, I remember, I knew how I was going to get to Seattle, and that was it. I knew I could get to Seattle, and then I knew that I wanted to get to Waldron Island, but I didn't know how, and the people who I was going to visit were not being very helpful in that. They said, well, you can call this number. I said, okay, and do what? How am I getting to your island in the middle of nowhere? And they said, well, this is the mailboat, so call this number, and maybe you can get picked up. And so I made it to Seattle. A friend came and picked me up there, took me to Port Townsend in Washington, and then from there, I made it by bus and sheer luck to a ferry that took me to a harbor on another island where I got picked up by the mailboat. But I don't think I could have done that with, I mean, and every step of the way, it wasn't like I was completely on my own. I could have called someone and gone back, but I really wanted to go to Waldron Island. And every step of that way, if I hadn't had those years and years of trust and learning how to be completely free like that, I don't think I would have done it. It was scary. I mean, I always had something I could fall back on, but no one else was making my decisions. No one else was figuring out my travel plans. I think that the whole trip, I had tried to figure out in advance. So I had an itinerary, except for that gap that I didn't know how I was going to get to that island, or back for that matter. And so being able to get there and do that, I spent a great week there. I sheared a sheep for the first time on that island. Great week. But being able to accomplish that and get from Seattle all the way to a teeny tiny little island in the Puget Sound and back on my own gave me so much confidence, and I really, it's that freedom and that trust that did it. So, I have a clock. The same time period, I started going to Not Back to School Camp. I went for the first time when I was 16 years old and worked there the past 2 years. And so I was trying to think, Not Back to School Camp was a huge, huge part of my life. And what did I learn at Not Back to School Camp? I was thinking, well, there's that whole socialization thing, but I kind of already covered that. And there's community, but I already kind of had that. So what is it that I learned? And so I was thinking about my time at Not Back to School Camp. And for those of you who don't know, it's a week-long session of about 150 unschooled teenagers. They aren't homeschooled, they're unschooled teenagers. There's two sessions in Oregon and one session on the East Coast. And I started thinking about the people who go there and my feelings afterwards. And it's such an intense feeling of just being charged, because I'm surrounded by 150 of the most passionate, vibrant, interested, curious people that I've ever met in my life. Nowhere else is there a gathering like this of 150 unschooled teenagers. And so I kept thinking, I was like, well, I learned skills. I got exposure to a lot of random things. I mean, the workshops are all camper-led, so you never know what's going to be there. I learned how to make a sock monkey puppet and had a discussion about logic, I mean, in the same day. So I didn't really know what that was. But then I thought about it, and I realized that the impressive thing about Not Back to School Camp is that when I go there, I really, really honestly feel like my group of friends and I are going to change the world. This group of people is going to change the world. And idealism was the concept that I finally hit upon. That people might roll their eyes and think, yeah, okay, you're going to change the world, but this group of people is going to do it. I mean, they're amazing. And nowhere else is there a group like this where they've been unschooled to such an extent that they're just on fire. They're not going to stop. That curiosity just keeps welling up and up and up. And they're learning things, and they have the time to delve into things and be really passionate, or not spend all their life on one thing, but also to dabble in a million different things and get all that well-rounded exposure to stuff. And the group of people that gather, and some of them have common interests, but most of them do what they want to do and then come and share it to the rest of us. And that passion leads to a very conscious thought about changing the world. There are workshops about changing the world. On the online community, there are pages about changing the world and starting ideal communities and how we're going to do it individually and then how we're going to do it globally. And so idealism is such an important thing there that I started thinking about it, especially as I was trying to come up with what I was going to talk about, that I thought that the final step, or maybe not the final step, but a step in unschooling that a lot of people skip over is being able to articulate that idealism. That for me, unschooling isn't complete without being able to talk about that. That when you're 10 and you're playing games, yes, you're unschooling, but I think that that needs to go to another level the older and older you get, and that to be consciously aware of that idealism and about unschooling. So my whole life, I mean, we've got these concentric circles, and when I was 12 and playing at Rainbow Kids and Dress Up, sure, I was unschooling, but the older I got, the more I started thinking about what it was I was doing and talking about it with people. The campers at Not Back to School Camp are a very unique bunch of people because they talk about it And I think that's such a key concept to unschooling, is not only doing it because that's great, but then you have the responsibility, because you have the awareness of what's going on, to keep it going and talk about it and discuss it. So, yes, idealism, very important. And because of, I go to Not Back to School Camp once a year and just get recharged, I get to be around these people and just go like, oh yeah, that we're going to change the world. And then I can go back into the rest of my world and feel like I'm changing it. So the rest of my world is, at this moment in time, going to California State University of Long Beach, where I'm majoring in recreation and leisure, which means I'm majoring in Girl Scouts, and it's great. But that's the recreation part. The leisure part is unschooling. They just don't know it yet. It really is the same thing. Leisure and unschooling is all about freedom and the state of mind and intrinsic satisfaction and reward. And so, and I didn't know this when I started. My whole goal was I want to run a camp. And so I thought I was going to camp school, basically. And now, having had leisure studies classes, it's amazing to me to see those connections. And so I feel kind of like I'm back at the beginning of a different concentric circle. Like I expanded and expanded and expanded, and now this outer ring, I can kind of take away from that and condense it down, and that's my new starting point from now on. And so, because I'm back in school. I spent all these years from when I was 10 on, I went to Cypress College, but I felt like those were more, I didn't feel like I was in college necessarily. I was using the classes I wanted to use. And now I'm in college. I've got a program. I'm in a class. I've got teachers who are telling me the right order of classes to take to a certain extent. My whole life at this point basically revolves around Cal State Long Beach. I'm the president of the Recreation Society and in a couple other academic societies, so I really spend all my time on campus. And so I'm kind of back to the beginning, it feels like. But with all of the things I learned all along the way to use. And so with that idealism that I learn at Not Back to School Camp every year and get recharged, then I'm back and I'm in a classroom situation with a bunch of people who are actually already predisposed to the idea of unschooling. They just have no idea. And being able to feel like I'm changing the world. I'm working on a research project right now that with one of my faculty advisors that illustrates the connection between leisure and unschooling. And even if I wasn't in this field, I still feel like I've got the tools to come into, I don't know, the real world, the rest of the world, and be able to be an unschooler and tell people about unschooling. And most people are really fascinated by it. Connection and application. So there's that. So finding out that leisure and unschooling are the real world, are the same thing, is just such a great example for me of that unschooling connects to everything, where you get this out and that leads to that and that leads to that, and ooh, that reminds me of that. Being able to go to Cal State Long Beach and see unschooling and leisure studies has been a much bigger picture for me of that concept. And so being able to connect all the stuff and all the experiences I had and funnel it into my college experience now has been a great connection to make. And then application is the other thing. So I unschooled and I learned these things. I learned about responsibility and idealism. Not that I'm done learning by any means, but I feel like I've got enough tools now that when I go to school, I can get out of it what it is I want to get out of it. And I spend a lot of time talking to other people about what it is that they want to get out of it. And so that going back to the beginning is a really important thing for me. So what I would have lost maybe if I had been in school, that curiosity and that the love of learning and passion, I got to go out, foster those, and then go back in to use them. And that is the places I've been.